We're continuing chapter 10. We're reading about Krishna's departure. First, we were reading about the state of affairs in the kingdom of Maharaj Yudhisthira at the time of his reign. And then we heard about the ladies who were on top of the palaces and showering flowers upon the Lord, and the Pandavas who were fanning the Lord and the Brahmins who were offering benedictions. So now we come to text 20. 20 through 31 we find the talks by the ladies of Hastinapur. Anyonya masit sanjopa uttama shloka chetasam kauravendra purastri nam sarvashuti manohara. Absorbed in the thought of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is sung in select poetry, the ladies on the roofs of all the houses of Hastinapur began to talk of him. This talk was more attractive than the hymns of the Vedas. The Prabhupada makes the point that the songs of Narottam Das Thakur have been accepted by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur as being as good as the Vedic hymns because of the subject matter. So the ladies may not have been great scholars, but they were absorbed in thinking of Krishna. And therefore, their talks were better than the hymns of the Vedas. The Upanishadic verses that are mostly of an impersonal nature are not as good as the talks of the ladies. And similarly, the benedictions given by the Brahmins are also not as good as the sanjalpa. Sanjalpa means the chit-chat, the talk by the ladies. This verse is commented upon in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Srila Sanatana Goswami quotes this verse and discusses it. He says, since the greatly learned Bhishma knew about the glories of the personality of Godhead, it's understandable that he should have spoken such praise of the gopis. But it's more surprising that the women who didn't have such specialized knowledge could glorify the gopis this, as did the women of Hastinapur. That will come in the verses that we'll encounter. Srila Sridhar Swami explains, the prayers of the ladies in Hastinapur attracted the attention of all the Vedas, and thus the personified Upanishads congratulated the ladies. Because the ladies belong to the capital of Sri Yudhisthira, the Kaurava king, it's implied that by their connection with him, they certainly could have spoken such realizations. Generally speaking, the citizens of a state are virtuous when their rulers are virtuous. As Vyasadeva and other sages depict in their epics, everyone in Hastinapur, under the administration of Yudhisthira and his brothers, was saintly and learned. In another chapter of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narada says to the Pandavas, Aho bhatta mahascharjam kavinam gayatam gata bhavadiya purastri nam gyana bhaktyuktayo harau. Truly, the words spoken by the ordinary women of your city amaze me. Those words focused on Krishna and imbued with transcendental knowledge and devotion are praised in songs by accomplished poets. So the cultural assumption here is that women are not going to be great scholars, they're not going to be great philosophers. But in a kingdom such as that of Yudhisthira Maharaj, the ordinary women, these are just ordinary women of the city, were so advanced in spiritual knowledge that they were able to speak like great sages, and their knowledge and devotion were praised by great learned persons. Any comments or questions here?
I was wondering this word, Sanja, Sanjalpa.
Sanjalpa.
What is it? Because we know Prajalpa means like.
Sun usually means complete. Sanjalpa, let's see what Sanjalpa comes up with.
Sanjaya.
Oh, well, Sanjaya, yeah, complete victory. Sanjalpa. S A. Jalpa. See what it says about Sanjalpa. Sanjivana, Sanjata, Sanjalpa, Sanjalpa. Okay, together, speaking together. Okay, it means to conversation. Jalpa is just talking, like prajalpa. Talk, 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 talk. Sanjalpa means group talk. There are also, in the Goswamis, there's talk about different kinds of jalpa. Let's see. There's like... There's jalpa, prajalpa, dijalpa, ujjalpa, sanjalpa, abhajalpa, 10 lits of chitra jalpa. Chitra means various kinds of jalpa, and they're given in 10 categories. It's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Let's see. Chitra jalpa. It's mentioned in 10th canto. It's mentioned here. Imaginative mad talks known as chitra jalpa, when Radharani's talking to the bumblebee. Parijalpa, vijalpa, ujjalpa, sanjalpa, abhijalpa, abhijalpa, ajalpa, pratijalpa, sujalpa. There are no English equivalents for these different features of jalpa. Imaginative talk. But here it seems that sanjalpa means conversation. You know, you can picture the women on the roof, you know, like ordinary materialistic women. In fact, I was in Bombay, and we were driving through a part of the city, and there was this big queue of people. And the devotee was driving, he said, "Oh, that's the darshan line." Darshan line? Yeah, they're waiting outside of who is that? Amitabh Bachchan's house, we were waiting for him to come out on the balcony and wave to them. Big movie star. So you can imagine ordinary materialistic women, you know, getting together on a balcony someplace and saying, "Ooh," you know, about some ordinary person. But here, so the same thing is going on, but the person is Krishna. And we'll see the quality of their discussions. Is that okay? Yes?
Many times we hear that in the Bhagavatam that not everyone knew that Krishna was God.
Mm-hmm.
But not the ladies know.
You'll see in the next verses how much they knew. And I was just reading someplace else that sometimes what happens with these devotees, even in the places where they know, is that their love for Krishna will overwhelm their knowledge. So then they'll forget. Or their knowledge, their awe and reverence, their appreciation of Krishna as God goes somewhat into eclipse because it's over outshone by their spontaneous love for Krishna. So we find that, for example, in the dealings of Queen Kunti, that she's sometimes affectionate to Krishna like an aunt, and sometimes respectful to Krishna like a worshipper. So that sometimes, these things sometimes come, except in Vrindavan. Even in Vrindavan sometimes a little bit peeks through, but practically in Vrindavan they forget, they don't care that Krishna is God. Anything else here? Yeah?
There is one interesting quote which is actually done with the, I think that is in the third chapter, that Krishna says that when my girlfriends or wives, they address me in a sultan mood that takes my mind away from their things.
Yeah, Krishna, actually, you know, you can imagine it gets rather boring after a while to have to hear all these formal recitations by learned scholars. You know, you are the greatest, you're the, yeah, okay. But for Krishna, it's more tasty to have, you know, the ladies come from the neighborhood houses and complain about him. He's this, he's a scoundrel, he's a rascal, he's stealing, he's passing stool on the clean floor, he's pinching the babies, he's, do something about this. Can you do something about this kid? That's more enjoyable for Krishna than all of the learned hymns of the Vedic literature. And when the gopis are complaining about him, that's the most tasteful. Anything else here? Okay.
Savakilayam purusha puratano ya eka asida vishesha atmani agre gunebhyo jagadatmani shre nimilita atman nishisupta shaktishu.
They said, here he is, the original personality of Godhead, as we definitely remember him. He alone existed before the manifested creation of the modes of nature. And in him only, because he is the Supreme Lord, all living beings merge as if sleeping at night, their energy suspended. So here we find that they have great knowledge of Krishna. The Sanatana Goswami comments that their first verses sounded like those of profound scholars. You know, this is the ordinary conversation that the women are having on the rooftops in the city. Imagine in New York to have a few women getting together on the rooftops and just having some chit chat that's better than what learned Vedic scholars could say. But that's the position of the women of Hastinapur, that they're getting together and talking, and their talk in relationship to Krishna is better, more profound in knowledge than the hymns of the Vedas, because they're directly focused on Krishna as the personality of Godhead, and they knew Purusha, he's a person, he's Puratana, the original person. So they're very clear about his identity. In the Bhagavad Gita, let's see what we have here. Prabhupada explains this business of the merging of the living beings after the day of Brahma and after the life of Brahma. So that's described also in the Bhagavad Gita. Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyad brahmano vidu ratrim yuga sahasrantam teho ratra vidojana avyaktad Vyaktaya sarva prabhavanti haragame ratriagame priliyante tatraiva vyakta sangike bhuta grama se vayam bhutva priliyate ratriagame vishav partha prabhavanti haragame. So there's 1,000 yugas in one day of Brahma, 1,000 yugas again in his night, and when the night comes, all the living beings are annihilated, day comes, they come out again. Abhasha means helplessly. Just like if you've ever been in really strong waves, you just get carried. You don't have a choice. You might think you do, but if you've ever been in really strong waves, you just don't have a choice. They're going, you're going, that's it. Avasha means helpless like that. Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. They're created and destroyed again and again. Doesn't mean that the soul is created, but their bodies are destroyed and the soul is absorbed again within the form of the Lord. Therefore, yato va imani bhutani jayante. Everything comes from the personality of Godhead. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada paraphrases, Eko vai narayana asin na brahmana ishano. The Shruti mantra said that only Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, existed before the creation. And there was no Brahma, Shiva, or other demigods. So this is also in the Brahma Samhita. You know the same thing. Someone know that verse right off the top? Come on, guys. No one knows?
Which one?
In Brahma Samhita, concerning 558? That really is wrong. I just accepted it at face value, but it's totally the wrong verse. Yeah. Nishvasita kalam. That's it. Let me just send a note to the errors guys to tell them they got the wrong verse. Yep, they got the wrong verse number. Every now and then. Yasyakya nishpasita kala matavalam yajivanti loma vilajaja gadandanata Vishnur mahansa hi yasya kala vishesho govindamadi purusham tamahantasya. So you know the picture that Lord Vishnu is breathing out and all the living entities are manifest in the myriad of universes, and he breathes in and they're all, everything is absorbed within him. In the 10th canto, in the prayers by the personified Vedas, it's explained that this merging is not the merging of the impersonalists, that it's something like the merging that you find when the bees go out and collect pollen and it's all merged in honey. It's all merged, but still the pollen has its individual identity. It still has its individual identity, so it adds its own flavor to the honey. It can be identified. So the same way, it's not that the living entities all merge and become one with the Lord or one with one another. They maintain their individuality, and therefore at the time of creation, they come out again with all their different karma, where just like a person sleeping. At night, everyone merges because they all go to sleep. They all enter the same darkness. But they wake up again, and it's not like I put on your hat, you put on my hat. Every one of us maintains our individuality. I'm still me, you're still you, and I pick up from where I left off. The living entities also, at the time of creation, pick up from where they left off at the time of the previous dissolution because of their own individuality, their own karma that goes with it. And Prabhupada points out that the it's Krishna who put everything into action, and it all works under his control, and therefore he's transcendental to this material creation. Any other points here?
Just an example of the Vedas. Where does this one come from?
Personified Vedas prayers. 87th chapter, 10th canto. Yes.
I was wondering, Narada Muni, when he came back after annihilation, I believe that one other person explained that he was then totally transcendental. But when he left, he was still the son of his mother.
He was transcendental because he attained liberation. He became a self-realized soul. It's said that as thunder and lightning appear simultaneously, he attained everything at once. Does it say that he attained that at the time of destruction? No. Just that... I can't hear you.
I think that was upon leaving his body when that happened.
Let's see what happened, what the story is. You want to find that? At any rate, at the time of leaving this body, he was a self-realized soul. So even though he may apparently have been the son of such and such person, he was now transcendental. And so when his body came out the next time, it was a transcendental body.
But he was already transcendental.
He was already. Iha yasya hare dasya karmana manasa gira nikalashva pyavastasu jivan mukta sujade. A person who is fully engaged in the service of Krishna is on the transcendental platform, even in the material world. Therefore, the self-realized person, in his next life, he takes a body in Krishna's association. How is it possible? Or, materially, the person, you know, now he appears to be the son of a king, and all of a sudden, the next body comes out a pig. Wait a second, what happened? But his consciousness was pig consciousness. So now he's got the pig body. He had pig karma, pig consciousness, now he gets pig body. Similarly, Narada Muni had transcendental consciousness. So when he appeared again, it was with the body of the sage, Narada, transcendental form. Okay? Saeva bhuyo nijavirya choditam svajiva mayam prakritim Sushrikshatim Anama Rupatmani Rupa Namani Vidhitsamano Nusasara Shastrakrit. Personality of Godhead, again desiring to give names and forms to his parts and parcels, the living entities, placed them under the guidance of material nature. By his own potency, material nature is empowered to recreate. Here, bhuya means, Prabhupada says again and again, the living entities, the creation and annihilation are going on again and again. And nijavirya choditam, by the personal energy of Krishna, nijavirya choditam, by Krishna's potency, everything is going on. This created world and material energy are under my control. Under the influence of prakriti, automatically they are created again and again, and this is done by me through the agency of my external energy, the Lord says. Then there's this discussion, anama, arupa, Atmani, Anama Rupa Atmani, Rupa Namani. The souls were nameless and formless, and the Lord desired that they have names and forms. Prabhupada comments on that. Actually, the spiritual spark, living entities, have no material names or forms. But in order to fulfill their desire to lord it over the material energy of material forms and names, they're given a chance for such false enjoyment, and at the same time, a chance to understand the real position through the revealed scriptures. The foolish and forgetful living being is always busy with false forms and false names. Modern nationalism is the culmination of such false names and false forms. Men are mad after false name and form. The form of body obtained under certain conditions is taken up as factual, and the name also taken bewilders the conditioned soul into misusing the energy in the name of so many isms. Everything's by names. Everyone's manipulated. Patriot Act. They give it a name and everybody puts their hand up and votes for it. Regardless of what the content is. Someone's a dog, a traitor. As soon as you're a traitor, it's all over for you. Or as soon as you're a hero, or a terrorist, or a saint, or a sharpie, or you've just put a name on someone. Or you make a name for yourself. And the name pulls all these associations along with it. So either people think that you're great because you're a Rockefeller, or you're a Ford, or you're the head of Humpty Dumpty Company, or whatever it is. Or you think that you're great because you're the head of Humpty Dumpty Company, or because you're this or that. Or by form, person's strong or tall or good looking or this or that. And false ego goes, woo! And even, you don't even have to be strong or tall or good looking, you can just think that you are. You can think that you are. You look at your form and say, pretty good. Or not, at least not so bad. Or you can go the other way and you can look and say, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, and go into depression. But it's the same thing. It's all about this form. You look in the mirror and you see you're getting old and you say, oh. Or that you're not, if you're a kid, that you're not old enough. You go, oh. Because we falsely identify with the form, we falsely identify with the name, and we identify others falsely the same way because of our desire. We have nothing to do with this false name and form, but we're imagining Ahamami. I'm this body, this is mine. So it's not our business. But we wanted it, and therefore the Lord gave it. The scriptures, however, supply the clue for understanding the real position, but men are reluctant to take lessons from the scriptures created by the Lord for different places and times. For example, the Bhagavad Gita is the guiding principle for all human beings, but by the spell of material energy, they do not take care to carry out the programs of life in terms of the Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study of knowledge for one who has thoroughly understood the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, people have no taste for them, and therefore they're under the clutches of Maya for repetition of birth and death. Prabhupada's glossing here, Shastrakrit. It's not translated in the verse. But Shastrakrit the compiler of revealed scripture. So that's Krishna. Who is this person who desired to give names and forms to the living entities and who placed them under the care of material nature? It's Shastrakrit, Krishna, who at the same time made the revealed scriptures, provided the revealed scriptures, so that the living entities could be liberated from these false names and forms. Any other comments here? Yeah, it's a world of names. Prabhupada, in the same section, I think, is compared to the bubble of sea waves, the babbling of sea waves. You know, all these names, you know, big names. Bill Gates. Right now, he's a big shot. He's the richest man in the world. He just came to India, and you know, everybody wanted to have lunch with him, and you know, this, that, and the other thing. But you know, few years, he'll just be a name. He'll just be a name. Microsoft will still exist, but Bill Gates will just be a memory. Our founder, you know. The Bill Gates Foundation will still be there, but Bill Gates will be in another body. And after some time, even the name will be gone. No one will even remember that there was a Bill Gates. Bill who? All these big people, the name is there. But it's only there for a short time. Sting. You know? Okay, now if you say Sting, everybody knows who you mean. At least if they're in a certain age bracket. You know, but from 100 years from now, Sting? What is Sting? You know, you name somebody that, you know, whose records your parents used to listen to. And, you know, I mean, you couldn't name them. Your parents would have to name them. The name, it's just names that pop up and seem to be something for some time. And then they disappear into insignificance. But we're all, it's all like that. Some name, some form, some activities. They appear, they exist for the blink of Lord Brahma, if that. Not even that, because the whole thing is one breath of Lord Brahma. By the time he finishes blinking, yuga cycles have gone by. And what is your life in the context of a yuga cycle? You know, like how many mosquitoes are born and die, or these little bugs in Mayapur that we get in the summer and other seasons, rainy season. They live for like a day, or they live for a night, some of them. And you look under the chandeliers or the lights in the morning, you see these heaps of bugs. Right? It's enormous. I mean, really, you know, shovel them up. They're enormous batches of bugs. And they're you know, what are they? They're nothing. They have no great significance. So our kings and presidents and heads of corporations and our scientists and our poets and writers, they're all like little bugs. You know, heaps of them are thrown away every moment of Brahma. But we're all going on as if we're very important people. I'm Mr. Such and Such. Even Brahma, he knocks on Krishna's door. Tell him Brahma's here. Which Brahma? Brahma's thinking, oh, four-headed Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras. Okay, I'll tell him. And Krishna calls for all the Brahmas. And the little four-headed Brahmas, like a mosquito amongst the elephants. So that's the position of all of our world of names. It's a world in which we imagine a great significance for ourselves. But it's imagination only. Anything else here?
Mm-hmm. What did Srila Prabhupada say about the significance of our spiritual names? Because that's very different version.
Well, it means that you're a servant of Krishna. Our spiritual name means that we're das, servant of Krishna. And of course, even by hearing your own name, you get purified. Some of you remember Krishna. Or by calling your name, people become purified because it's in connection with Krishna. Okay. Now, these names are transcendental. Names like Krishna, Govinda, these are spiritual names.
Mm-hmm. Could you comment, modern nationalism is the culmination of such false names and forms. Why is it the culmination?
Big time, you know? That I'm George Lincoln, or that I'm young, or I'm older, I'm this or I'm that. It's nothing compared to being American. Who am I? I'm an American. That sense of nationalism is actually very, very strong. And I'm actually astonished after so many years in the society how strong it is in even in myself or in other members. Srila Prabhupada used to use it. He would say something, he would speak sometimes in terms of national characteristics. You know, what is the use of you being, you're American, you have to do something wonderful, otherwise what is the use of your being American? Or he would say something, you know, some other, something else in terms of people's national identities. So you're German, you should be very, whatever. Or Scottish, so brave, and you know, different characteristics of the Scots or of the Americans or of the English or of what have you. And you know, at the time, actually early when Prabhupada would talk about these things, you're American, you're members of a great nation, I think, you know, like, wait a second, I'm, you know, not this body, I'm this and that. But you know, over time I see how persistent actually this sense of being this or that is. And we find it in relationships among devotees where, you know, there's a certain American sense of superiority that Americans tend to carry around with them, that gets the whole world peeved with them. There's certain characteristics, certain assumptions about people of other nationalities and what their comparative worth is that Americans have. Similarly, French, similarly the Germans, they all have, you know, a certain take on the world that's very much conditioned with, you know, their upbringing, their view, anyway, it's a whole story. Our view of the world, you know, he doesn't speak French. Like, what's the use of him? You're kind of a barbarian. He doesn't speak French. Or he doesn't speak English. He's, you know, an uneducated person. You know, the British had their you know, down view of the natives of the country we're in at the moment, based on their sense of who they were. And even, you know, even the most punk, stupid jerk of an American can feel himself superior because he's an American. You know, he could be a total moron, ethically the pits, intellectually crippled, physically weak, lacking in courage, lacking in everything, and still think that he's great because he's an American. And similarly, other people. I was in the airport in Peru one time, in Lima. And they had big letters on the... I wrote an essay about it. They had big letters on the wall. Tengo el orgullo de ser peruano. I have the pride of being Peruvian. Peruvian. Go anywhere in the world and say, you know, I'm proud. I have the pride of being, you know, Peruvian. You're from where? Peruvian. What's that? You know, but they're brought up to think that it's the greatest thing in the world to be Peruvian. You know, they belong to a little two-bit nation someplace down in Latin America somewhere. They could just fall off the map tomorrow and nobody would notice. And it's a subject matter for pride. And this is it. Nationalism has that irrational sense of corporate worth instills, or conducive to that irrational sense of corporate worth, group worth. On my own, I'm nothing, but together we're nothing also, but we think that we're so. Something else? Okay.
Sabayam yat paramatra surayo jitendriya nirjitamatari shvara ishana pashanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana nandesha satvam parimarshtam arhati.
Here is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead whose transcendental form is experienced by the great devotees who are completely cleansed of material consciousness by dint of rigid devotional service and full control of the life and the senses. And that is the only way to purify existence. Prabhupada comments, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord can be known in His real nature by dint of pure devotional service. So it's stated here that only the great devotees of the Lord who are able to clear the mind of all material dust by rigid devotional service can experience the Lord as He is. And commenting on Jitendriya, Srila Prabhupada explains that only by pure devotional service can one properly control the senses. Raso vajram rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. It's very difficult to get rid of the darkness, but when the sun is there, the sun displaces the darkness. So controlling the senses by stopping them will be very difficult, but controlling them by engaging them in the service of Krishna is doable. The only controlling the senses by devotional service is the only and the easiest means. Any questions on that? Or anything here? Yes?
Chantak Maharaj spoke about the Srinja Muni.
Yeah, this morning, right.
Well, I couldn't quite follow the story. Indra sent
Menaka. The story was, in brief, here's this sage, Vishwamitra, who's doing severe tapasya. And the result of tapasya is you get power. And it seems that this Vishwamitra Muni had already created a duplicate Indraloka. Maharaj talked about that this morning, which was a cause of some concern. He gave the example, imagine, you know, somebody created a duplicate United States of America. You know, Bush wouldn't like it. So Indra wasn't very happy with this sage. He was edgy about him. And he's doing severe tapasya. Now he's becoming a rishi, a maharshi. So Indra becomes anxious about his own post, because it's by tapasya, by piety, by sukriti, that one becomes Indra, that one takes the post of Indra and takes charge of Indraloka. So he's thinking, uh-oh, here's this sage doing severe tapasya. My post is endangered. So he sent this Menaka. Menaka is one of the heavenly society women. I suppose what we'd call a tart. But very high class. She's from Indraloka. That's really not fair to her. She's a very elevated being. But anyway, her business is to be attractive. So he sent Menaka. And Vishwamitra Muni was in meditation. So the description is there, Bhagavad Gita, eyes half open, half closed, fixed on the tip of the nose. You're not going to see Menaka. You're going to see the tip of your nose. That's all you're going to see. Because that's the practice. You don't want to be distracted by anything out there. So you've withdrawn. Pratyahara. Pratyahara means the opposite of eating. It means stopping the senses, drawing everything in. So your vision, instead of being out there, this is the opposite of what Vishwamitra was Muni was doing. I was in an airport one time, Logan Airport in Boston, early morning flight, and I didn't quite know which way to go to reach my gate, so I stopped a worker there in the morning, and you know, which way to gate such and such. And as I was talking to him, this woman walked by. You know, ordinary, you know, young businesswoman. And the guy spun around about 180 degrees. You know, did you see that? You know, he's got his eye on her butt or something. Did you see that? You know, and this is like 7 o'clock in the morning. Imagine that guy's neck by 7 o'clock at night. Adanta gopir vishatam to mishram. Senses are uncontrolled. So the eyes being uncontrolled, you know, that anything. You know, anything that moves out there, the eyes are moving with it. So the opposite, the yogi, pulls the senses in. He's not going to hear material sounds. He's not going to see material sights. So all of his senses are drawn inward. And so the vision specifically is fixed on the tip of the nose. That's all. Nothing else is allowed in your vision but that. So the girl is there and he's not seeing her. Shamik Rishi didn't see Maharaj Pariksit. He was absorbed inwardly. Didn't even see him. So the sage is not seeing the girl, but she was wearing some bangles on her ankle bracelets, ankle bells. And she's, you know, prancing around. So although he didn't see, he heard her ankle bells. And that was enough. Bayur Gandhani Vashya, right? Bayur Gandhani Vashya. No, what am I thinking of? Even one of the senses can pull away the mind, even of a person who's trying to control them. What is that? Bhagavad Gita? Senses are so strong and impetuous that they forcibly carry away even the mind of the person who's endeavoring to control them. That's the position.
What verse number?
Oh, I don't know. Which verse?
267 is also.
Let's see. Which verse I'm thinking? 267.
Is it on the water?
Yeah, thank you. That's the verse I have in mind. 267. Indriyanam hi charatan yanmano nubhidhiyate tarasya hariti vagyam vayur navamibhamasi. Right. as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind. So even one of the senses in which the mind becomes fixed carries away the intelligence, carries away the mind, even of a person who's trying to control them. Indriyanam hi chartam. Chartam means roaming. You know, like a radar screen where you have that bar that's roaming, you know, it's going around in a circle till it hits something. So the senses are roaming around, and the mind, you know, when they hit something, they send a flash to the mind. Hey, we got something here. 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 And if the mind becomes fixed on that signal, hadati pragyan takes away his intelligence. Just the way that the strong wind carries the boat away. So that's what happened to Vishwamitra Muni. The ears got him. Ankle bells. Ankle bells means woman. Must be a beautiful woman. Da 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 da. One thing leads to another. Jayato Vishyam Pumsam. So it was an eye opening experience for him. And he became the father of Shakuntala, as Maharaj mentioned, the celebrated damsel. And then later he realized, oh, I blew it. And he went back to his meditation. So. Excuse me? Shakuntala?
No,
Menaka.
Yeah,
you can't hold on to the Indraloka girls. They keep going back to Indra. I forget the history there. It's the subject of a great drama by Kalidas. Yes.
Yeah, at a certain point after he and his daughter, he snapped out of mind and realized, whoops.
Yeah.
And then she agreed to go on her way and he went back to his
They agreed to a separation. Okay. Anything else here? Vishwamitra Muni comes up quite often in these sorts of discussions. So, it's interesting, this text 22, text 23, text 24, no, even starting with text 21, 22, 23, 24. Sa means he. Sa eva, sava. They're all, yes, sava, sava, saeva, savai. Sa means he. So again, the girls are talking about him. He's this, he's this, he's this, he's this. But see the level of their talk. Sava ayam sakyanugita satkato vedeshu guhyeshu saguya bhi ya eka Isho jagadatma lilaya srijatya vachyati natatra sajjate. Give me just a moment here. Oh yeah? Okay. Oh dear friends, here is that very personality of Godhead whose attractive and confidential pastimes are described in the confidential parts of Vedic literature by his great devotees. It is he only who creates, maintains, and annihilates the material world, and yet remains unaffected. So the pastimes of the Lord are very confidential. Vedeshu guyeshu cha guyavadi bi. Guya, very secret stuff we're dealing with here. Pastimes of the Lord are described in the confidential parts of the Vedic literature, not everywhere, by the great devotees. And this personality of Godhead creates, maintains, and annihilates everything, but he's transcendental under all circumstances. Okay? Anything here? yadahi dharmena tamo dhyo nirpa jivanti tatraisha hi sattvata kila datte bhagam satyam mritam dayam yasho bhavaya rupani dadat yuge yuge. Just get my bearings here. Yes, okay. Whenever there are kings and administrators living like animals in the lowest modes of existence, the Lord in His transcendental form manifests His supreme power, the truth positive, shows special mercy to the faithful, performs wonderful activities, and manifests various transcendental forms as is necessary in different periods and ages. Here, as in Bhagavad Gita, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, Krishna's coming, and specifically to deal with the demonic kings. Let's see. Material world, I'm reading at the end of 576, is created to satisfy the whims of the Nityabhadha, or everlastingly conditioned souls, just as naughty boys are provided with playing cradles. Otherwise, there is no need of the material world. But when they become intoxicated with the power of material science to exploit the resources unlawfully, without the sanction of the Lord, and that also only for sense gratification, there is a necessity of the Lord's incarnation to chastise the rebellious and protect the faithful. When He descends, He exhibits superhuman acts just to prove His supreme right, and materialists like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, and Kamsa are sufficiently punished. He acts in a manner which no one can imitate. For example, when the Lord appeared as Rama, He bridged the Indian Ocean. When He appeared as Krishna, from His very childhood He showed superhuman activities by killing Putana, Aghasura, Shakatasura, Kaliya, etc., and then His maternal uncle, Kamsa. When He was at Dwarka, He married 16,108 queens, and all of them were blessed with a sufficient number of children. So no one is equal, goes on, no one is equal to or greater than Him. There's another portion I wanted to read, actually, which comes before that. Yeah, the king, previously, must be a recognized person like Maharaj Yudhisthira or Parikshit. Such kings have full responsibility and knowledge from authorities about the administration of the world. But at times, due to the ignorance, influence of the ignorance mode of material nature, tamagun, the lowest of the modes, kings and administrators come into power without knowledge and responsibility. And such foolish administrators live like animals for the sake of their own personal interest. The result is that the whole atmosphere becomes surcharged with anarchy and vicious elements. Nepotism, bribery, cheating, aggression, and therefore famine, epidemic, war, and similar other disturbing features become prominent in human society. And the devotees of the Lord or the faithful are persecuted by all means. All these symptoms indicate the time of an incarnation of the Lord to reestablish the principles of religion and vanquish the maladministrators. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Now this is our picture of what these people are, the so-called leaders of the world. Without responsibility to the plan of the Lord. They're cats and dogs. That's what we're hearing here. Any questions? Yes.
The concept of Nityabhata, eternally conditioned, I know I've heard the explanation before, but what exactly does that mean?
It means you can never find out a time when they weren't conditioned.
Okay. Alright. So, basically, based on the fact that we're covered by the modes, we can't.
Yeah, it's said that Prabhupada says, since time immemorial, in Hindi, when he gives that lecture, he says, Anadi Kal se, since time, since beginningless time, no one can figure it out. When we were created, when we were conditioned, you'll never find it.
Mm-hmm. This word nepotism.
Nitya?
Nepotism.
Nepotism. Nepotism means favoring your own family members. You know, I'm the president. My son is the secretary of defense, and my brother-in-law is the this, and my nephew is that, and the whole government is filled up with my own. Descendants, my own relatives, that's nepotism. Not the qualified person who gets the job, but the guy who's in the family. Nepotism. Very strong force.
Cronyism?
Cronyism? That's, means you give the things work for the benefit of your cronies. You know what a crony is? It's a nasty way of saying compatriot. Your partners in crime, essentially. Your buddies who are partners in crime with you. Those are cronies. There's probably that's the feel of the word. Crony is a close friend or companion, a chum, but it has a strong negative connotation to it. Cronyism is not just getting along with your friends, but it means, you know, your fellow gangsters get the benefit. That Prabhupada mentions it here?
No, but he mentions it another place.
Yeah, cronyism. I'm not even sure if it's accepted as an English word. Yeah, it is. The practice of favoring one's close friends, especially in political appointments.
Girl,
oh yeah.
Maladministration.
Excuse me.
Maladministration.
Maladministration. Mal means bad. Bad administration. Okay. Anything else? Okay. We start from text 6:26 through 30. We'll find that the Hastinapur residents are glorifying the residents of Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. Aho alam shlagyatamam yado kulam, aho alam punyatamam madhorvanam, yadeshapam sam rishabha sriyapati, sajanmana chankramanena chanchati. Oh, how supremely glorified is the dynasty of King Yadu, and how virtuous is the land of Mathura, where the supreme leader of all living beings, the husband of the goddess of fortune, has taken his birth and wandered in his childhood. So here they're glorifying Mathura, and Sanatana Goswami comments that now, after speaking like scholars, the women begin speaking like Vaishnavas, steeped in devotional ecstasy. And they say, aho alam, aho alam. It means they're expressing their ecstatic feelings. Aho, oh, aho alam, aho alam. It's an expression of ecstasy. The aho alam shlagyatamam, supremely glorified, yadukulam, aho alam punyatamam madhovanam, how supremely virtuous, punyatamam, supremely pious, is the land of Mathura. Yad esha pumsam, rishabha shriyapati, swajanmana, chankramanena, chankramanena, anchati. It's so wonderful because the supreme leader of all living beings and the Shripati, the husband of the goddess of fortune, Swajanmana, was born there and crawls around there like a child. And Srila Rupa Goswami says in Laghu Bhagavatamrita that the use of this word anchati in the present tense declares that Krishna's pastimes in Mathura are eternal. Mathura Bhagavan Yatra Nityam Sanihito Hari. In Bhagavatam it said that the city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna because Krishna lives there eternally. It's not that Krishna leaves, because Mathura is always manifest somewhere and Krishna is always there performing his pastimes. So Nityam Sanihito Hari. And Sanatana Goswami comments, again it's in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that the women of Hastinapur expressed these realizations at a moment of painful crisis for them. When Krishna was leaving the Kaurava capital for Dwarka. And Krishna's influence is so wonderful that even while he was abandoning them, they could glorify their rivals in Dwarka and Vrindavan. That's noted here. Any comments or questions here? There's something else I wanted to read. Yeah. The fortunes of the Yadu dynasty and that of the inhabitants of the land of Mathura cannot be materially estimated. If simply by knowing the transcendental nature of the birth and activities of the Lord, one can get liberation easily, we can just imagine what is in store for those who actually enjoyed the company of the Lord in person as a family member or as a neighbor. All those who were fortunate enough to associate with the Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune, certainly obtained something more than what is known as liberation. Therefore, rightly, the dynasty and the land are both ever glorious by the grace of the Lord. Aho bhatta swar yashashas tiraskari kushastali punya yashaskari bhuva pashyanti nityam yadanu graheshitam smitava lokam swapatim smayat prajaha. Undoubtedly, it's wonderful. Undoubtedly, it's wonderful that Dwarka has defeated the glories of the heavenly planets and has enhanced the celebrity of the earth. The inhabitants of Dwarka are always seeing the soul of all living beings, Krishna, in his loving feature. He glances at them and favors them with sweet smiles. Aho bhatta. How wonderful, how splendid. Swayashasa, the tiraskari. Dwarka defeats the glories of Swargaloka, the heavenly planets. And yashaskari, punya yashaskari bhuva, it makes the earth famous. It enhances the celebrity of the earth. Pashyanti nityam yadanu graheshitam. Because the people there are always able to see Krishna. And they're always favored, smitava lokam, by his smiling glance. Prabhupada says, Dwarka is certainly more important than the heavenly planets, because whoever has been favored with the smiling glance of the Lord shall never come back again to this rotten earth. which is certified by the Lord himself as a place of misery. And Prabhupada talks about the value of, therefore, of engaging in devotional service, living in Dwarka or Mathura or Vrindavan. Because devotional service in these three places is magnified, those who go there to follow the principles and terms of instructions imparted in the revealed scriptures surely achieve the same result as obtained during the presence of Lord Sri Krishna. His abode and he himself are identical, and a pure devotee, under the guidance of another experienced devotee, can obtain all the results even at present. It's not just going to the place, but it's being properly guided at the same time. Okay. Nunam vratasnana hutadineshvara samarchito yasya grihitapani bhi pivanti ya sakyadharamritam muhur rajastriya sammumuhur yadas ashayaha. O friends, just think of his wives whose hands he has accepted, how they must have undergone vows, baths, fire sacrifices, and perfect worship of the Lord of the universe to constantly relish now the nectar from his lips by kissing. The damsels of Vrajabhumi would often faint just by expecting such favors. Prabhupada has a nice discussion here. The religious rites in the scriptures are meant to purify the mundane qualities of conditioned souls and enable them gradually to be promoted to rendering transcendental service to the Lord. Attainment of this stage of pure spiritual life is the highest perfection, and this stage is called Swarup, or the factual identity of the living being. Liberation means renovation of this stage of Swarup. Muktir hitvan yata rupam swarupena vyavastha. Real liberation means to be free from this false identity and situated in one's real identity as a servant of Krishna. And Prabhupada explains there are five relationships. Within the conjugal relationship, there are two kinds, swakiya and parakiya, the married wives and the girlfriends of the Lord. So the these topics are being again introduced here. We're not going to come into a full description of these topics until the 10th canto. They're briefly mentioned again in the 3rd canto. The Lord's pastimes in summary are described there, but really we're not going to get into a full discussion until the 10th canto. But here in the 1st canto there's a brief introduction by the ladies of Dwarka. Prabhupada points out that these relations between the Lord and his wives or his girlfriends are not mundane affairs. Otherwise Sukadeva Goswami or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't have been interested. These are all transcendental subject matters. Again, Sanatana Goswami comments on this verse. He says, in the opinion of these ladies, Sri Krishna's queens in Dwarka must in previous lives have disciplined themselves and worshipped him in many ways to have gained him as their husband, for those queens can regularly taste the nectar of Krishna's lips. But the gopis of Vrindavan are even greater because they always think about that nectar within their hearts. The nectar of Krishna's lips must be exceedingly pleasant, since the gopis, those most respectable girls, are enchanted by it. Thus it is proven once again that Krishna is the Supreme Person, and that because of the extreme love the divine gopis of Braja have for him, they are superior even to Sri Rukmini and Krishna's other wives. Surely the gopis also had the privilege of drinking the Adharamrita, the nectar from Krishna's lips, but beyond even that, they'd become bewildered just by remembering it. Notice in the verse, it's there. Rajastriya sammamuhur yadashaya. Just thinking about it, they practically faint. Just thinking about it. That means they were tasting it within their minds. They're always drinking the nectar of Krishna's lips, even in their minds. Any other comments here?
In the first part of the poem it says, nor are fruit of action, culture of knowledge, or perfection in mystic powers ends in themselves. They are means to attain to Swarup. So the first two are easy to understand. What's the connection between perfection and mystic powers being a channel towards attaining one's Swarup?
All of these things are meant for gradual advancement. Perfection, mystic powers is actually not just meant for putting on a good show to impress your friends. The real mystic powers have to do with control of the senses, control of the mind. Those are the real mystic powers, not just watch what I can do. So the advanced mystics are those really who can focus their minds in such a way that, as described in the 8th chapter, at the time of leaving this body, they can close up everything and go. They can leave at the suitable time of their own choosing. They don't have to go like everybody else. Well, okay, goodbye. Wait a second, time's not right yet. Got 6 days more till the auspicious day comes. I'm not leaving. And they don't have to because they have power. That kind of mystic power. Power to say, I'm not going to go to the heavenly planets. I'm not going to go to this planet or that planet. I'm going to not be attracted by any of this stuff in the material world. I'm going back to Vaikuntha. That's the real thing. Perfection. But that kind of mystic power requires advancement in devotion. Yavirya shukena hrita svayambare pramatya chaija pramukhan hishushmina pradumna sambamba sutariyo para yascharita bhoma vadhe sahasrashaha. The children of these ladies are Pradumna, Samba, Amba, etc. Ladies like Rukmini, Satyabhama, and Jambavati were forcibly taken away by him from their Svayambhara ceremonies after he defeated many powerful kings headed by Shishupal. And other ladies were also forcibly taken away by him after he killed Bhaumasura and thousands of his assistants. All of these ladies are glorious. So this is typical. When women talk about a man, naturally they talk about his wife, his children. This is typical gossip. Talk about the man, we talk about his wife, we talk about his children. But in relation to Krishna, the talk naturally heads in that direction. And it's transcendental in all respects. And how many wives and children Krishna had. You normally talk about, oh, how many children does he have? Oh, he's got two boys and a girl. And da-da-da-da-da. Oh, what's the boy doing? Oh, the two boys are going to college and the girl's, still in high school. But here, Krishna had 16,108 wives and 10 children by each. So it's quite a lot to talk about. Pradumna sambamba sutariya. Sutariya, beginning with children beginning with Pradyumna, Samba, and so on. So there's lots. And Virya Shulkena, Krishna gained these wives by paying the price of heroism. That was the cost of paying, of getting these wives. He had to show his virya, his power. Considering this verse, by the way, may throw some light on a notorious comment that Srila Prabhupada makes in Srimad Bhagavatam about rape. Namely, a man is always famous for his aggression toward a beautiful woman, and such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, it's a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. We recently received a batch of letters at the BBT from people saying, wait a second, hold on a second here. You know, and perhaps suggesting that this could be edited or that, or taken out, or something should be done, because readers would be put off by such apparently sexist comments from Srila Prabhupada. So we had quite a lively discussion, in fact, among several senior devotees that we consulted regarding this. And they had different takes on what Prabhupada intended here. But I'll give you mine. This is a letter I wrote to an uninitiated devotee woman back in 1999. Thank you for your letter, da-da-da-da-da. Clearly, Srila Prabhupada does not intend to say that what women really want is, for example, to be mugged and violated in Central Park. When you look at the translation and purport for text 41 and 42 and consider the two purports together, you get a better understanding of Srila Prabhupada's point. In essence, the male wants to conquer and the female wants to be conquered. A woman does not want to be sheepishly asked her hand by a bashful, weak-kneed milquetoast. She wants to be pursued and won, to be fought over by strong and eager suitors, to be swept off her feet. In that sense, a man is attractive to a woman when he's bold, strong, valorous, assertive, aggressive, manly, and so on. Hollywood knows this, and so we have box office stars like Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and so on. When I lived in San Diego, I used to frequent a used bookshop, which, apart from the books I was looking for, had rows and rows of what the book trade calls romances. Novels for whom the intended readers are obviously women. These books are not high literature, they're formulaic, but they sell like mad, and even from the covers, the formula is obvious. Whatever the details of the storyline, the woman is won, conquered, overpowered, possessed by a strong, powerful man. I don't mean to say that women have no taste for higher literature. My point is simply that Hollywood and the book trade are tapping into primal psychological veins, where the blood, you can bet your millions on it, is sure to be flowing. The film producers and book publishers know the heart of their audience. Of course, rape carries with it images of guns, bruises, and brutal thugs, hardly what any woman hopes for, but the essential feature, a man who is strong and aggressive, is sexually attractive. The ultimate attractive male, of course, is Krishna himself. He carried off Rukmini Devi, snatching her like a lion from the clutches of the jackal, Shishupal. Krishna married Satya after defeating seven bulls. Krishna married Lakshmana by carrying her off at her Swayamvara ceremony, in the same way that Garuda snatched the jar of nectar from the hands of the demons. And Krishna married 16,000 other wives after rescuing them from the demon Bhomasura. The rapists and romantic heroes of the material world are nothing but perverted reflections of Krishna. Krishna is the object of love, real object of love, for all living entities. As long as we continue in material consciousness, identifying with our material bodies as male and female, and forgetting Krishna, we have to continue forever as the cheaters and the cheated, the rapists and the raped in this material, miserable world. And therefore, our real business is to develop our dormant love for Krishna. I hope this answers your question. Any question?
Was that taken out?
No. Our final decision on this subject was that we're not going to take it out, we're not going to change it, we're not going to footnote it, and we're not going to explain it in the book. What we're going to do is going to put a little note in the front of the book that says, yeah, there may be stuff here that raises your eyebrows or makes you wonder or puzzles you or maybe makes you a little upset. And we have a website where we have a collection of such topics. And if you'd like some further discussion about them, here's the address. And we'll construct that website and deal with questions like this one that concern people when they read the books, and try to give thoughtful analysis of what it is that Prabhupada's saying, what it is that he means. One reason is because people have different opinions. It's not like, you know, we had Vishakha saying one thing, Urmila saying another thing, somebody else saying, you know, different people all saying that essentially Prabhupada was right, but they had different takes about why he was right or what he meant or what he was actually saying. And that, of course, is the nature of philosophy and the intellectual life, that, you know, there are different ways of looking at things. Say, what is he saying here? What's he mean? And we may not all agree. Of course, we'll all agree that he's right, but how he's right, there may be different opinions about. So if we put if we put Urmila's explanation in the book, Vishakha may not agree with it. If you put Vishakha's explanation, I might agree with it. If you put my explanation, Vishakha and Urmila may not agree with it. If you put all of our explanations, the fourth person's not going to agree with it. So who's entitled to have their opinion go in the book as the official explanation? But on the website, we can have my explanation, Urmila's explanation, Vishakha's explanation, so other, you know, thoughtful devotees can give their points of view. And, you know, the reader can look through this and say, well, you know, I don't buy that, I don't buy that. Well, that's got something to it, okay. You know, they can pick and choose whatever works for them. Is that okay? That's what we've decided to do. We decided that it wasn't right for us to go meddling around in Prabhupada's books, adding, you know, little footnotes, giving our authoritative opinion of what Prabhupada meant when Prabhupada's not here to tell us which of our opinions is right. Okay? Excuse me?
Is it a website?
Is it a website? It hasn't happened yet. It is, it's a project. This was just decided last month, actually. This is December. Yeah, last month we decided to do this. So it'll take a while to develop. If you have any particular questions you would like dealt with on this website, you can write to Kaishori. She's on Pamela. Kaishori is our... or you can write to me, or there's a few of us who are involved in that site, getting it up and running. If there are any questions you'd like to address or any answers you'd like to give to puzzling questions or like this, feel free to participate. Okay? We better race along here. Etaparam shtritvam apastapeshalam nirasta shocham batasadhu kurvate ya samgrahat pushkura lochana patir najatvapait ya hritibir vidisprashand. All these women auspiciously glorified their lives despite their being without individuality and without purity. Their husband, the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, never left them alone at home. He always pleased their hearts by making valuable presentations. This word, apashtapeshalam, may be perplexing. Without individuality, we know that Srila Prabhupada is not saying that they have no personal individual existence. So there has to be another meaning. Apasta means thrown off, set aside, driven away, carried away, abandoned, discarded, disregarded. And Peshala means charm, grace, beauty, loveliness. So in essence, their good, charming qualities had been spoiled. Their individual merits had been ruined. Sri Jiva Goswami says, Sri Rukmini and other queens came from different classes of society. Sri Rukmini and the other queens. The word apashtapeshalam here describes their situation. These words do not describe Sri Rukmini and the other queens born in higher classes. The other queens, born as lower class women, may have had some faults, but by glorifying Lord Krishna, they all became supremely purified. Interesting. He says they came from lower section to begin with, and we know, well, they were carried off by Bhomasura. So if they, whatever good qualities they had, now they're all, you know, their reputation is spoiled. Apastapeshalam. In spite of being, and certainly, nirastashocham, they lost their purity on account of being contaminated by Bhomasura's association. Srila Prabhupada comments, the devotees of the Lord are purified souls. As soon as the devotees surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord sincerely, the Lord accepts them, and thus the devotees at once become free from all material contaminations. By engagement in the service of the Lord, the designative disqualifications are removed, and as pure souls, they become eligible to enter into the kingdom of God. There's another point here. Ahriti bir hridi sprishan. He touched their hearts by making, giving them valuable presentations. Valuable presentations, of course, means valuable presents. Every woman likes to get presents. But how many women have a husband who can give them gifts from the heavenly planets? You know, my husband bought me a gold necklace from Cartier. Wow. But whose husband, you know, who has a husband who can bring them a parijata tree from the heavenly planet? That's Krishna. So he very much endeared himself to these wives. He never left them alone. Even though there were 16,108 of them, he expanded himself so that it seemed as if he was, not only seemed, but in fact he was with all of them at the same time. So he appeared to be very attentive, or in fact practically under the control of these wives, although factually he was in complete control of the situation. Any other comments here?
This never left them alone at home doesn't refer to this. Now he's left Walker and they are actually alone with him.
What?
Well, now Krishna's he's not with his wife, so that he has left them alone at this
point. Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
How
does that happen? Let's look at that. Najatu apayati. He never leaves them. And how does Prabhupada comment on that? He says, yeah, that he expanded himself to be with all of them. But another explanation is that even when he leaves, he's there in their hearts. He's in their thoughts, he's in their hearts. They're never alone, even when he leaves. Okay, we'll move on. Anything else? Evam vidha gadanti nam sagira purayoshitam nirikshanena abhinandan sasmitena yayo hari. While the ladies of the capital of Hastinapur were greeting him and talking in this way, the Lord, smiling, accepted their good greetings, and casting the grace of his glance over them, he departed from the city. These were different groups of ladies, that's explained by Srila Jiva Goswami. And therefore, although they're speaking in different moods, in the beginning the verses describe really philosophical talk about the Lord's creative capabilities in terms of the universe, and here we're talking about his conjugal relationships. So these could be viewed as clashing tastes, but Jiva Goswami reconciles this by saying there are different groups of ladies talking about the glories of the Lord. Nirikshena abhinandan sasmitena. The Lord reciprocated with all the ladies by smiling and glancing on them. So he's appreciating. And Yayo, in spite of appreciating, he shows his opulence of detachment by leaving anyway. They're all glorifying him, but he has his business. He's gone. In this way we complete the prayers, not prayers. These are not prayers, these are simply chit-chat. The chit-chat of the ladies of Hastinapur beats the Vedic prayers hands down. There's more to them, more deeper philosophical understanding, and profound love and attachment for Krishna. Even in the Sanjalpa, the talk that the ladies are having among themselves. And now, in the rest of the chapter, we hear about the Lord's journey to Dwarka. Ajata Shatru Pritanam Gopitaya Madhudvishaha Parebya Shankita Snehat Prayunkta Chaturangini. Maharaj Yudhisthira, although no one's enemy, engaged four divisions of defense, horse, elephant, chariot, and army, to accompany Lord Krishna, the enemy of the Asuras. The Maharaj did this because of the enemy and also out of affection for the Lord. So here again, this is another example where love for Krishna overpowers the sense of his power and opulence. Krishna, of course, needed no protection, but the king offered the bodyguard out of affection, snehat, and out of affection, Krishna accepted it, placing himself as one of the king's subordinates. So the affection for the Lord overcame any awareness of his power and his opulence. Ata duragatan shauri kauravan virahaturan sannivartya dritham snigdhan prayat sva nagarim priyai. Out of profound affection for Lord Krishna, the Pandavas, who were of the Kuru dynasty, accompanied him a considerable distance to see him off. They were overwhelmed with the thought of future separation. The Lord, however, persuaded them to return home, and he proceeded toward Dwarka with his dear companions. Could you ask whoever that is, probably Janmashtami, to have that chat somewhere? He's our organizer, but he has the strongest voice also. It carries. Okay. So again, we encounter here the emotion of separation. The Pandavas are staying with him up to the last opportunity seeing him off, and they're overwhelmed by the thought that now Krishna is going to be in Dwarka, we have to stay here. Kuru Jangalapan Chalan Shura Senan Sayamunan Brahmavartam Kurukshetram Matsyan Sarasvatanata Maru Dhanvam Atikramya Shora Shovira Bhurayo Paran Anartan Bhargavo Pagach Chantabaho Managvibhu. O Shaunaka, the Lord then proceeded toward Kuru Jangala, Panchal, Shurasena, the land on the bank of the river Jamuna, Brahmavarta, Kurukshetra, Matsya, Saraswata, the province of the desert, and the land of scanty water. After crossing these provinces, he gradually reached the Sovira and Abhira provinces, then west of these reached Dwarka at last. And Prabhupada dismisses here the need of geological research, considering it unprofitable, and we simply go by the Bhagavatam, good enough. But some of these names are recognizable. Kurukshetra, the place is still there. Saurashtra is mentioned, I think. Isn't it? Saurashtra? Yeah, Saurashtra. These bulls that we have here, the ones that have the really big horns, the enormous horns that turn around, they're from Saurashtra. So if you want to strike up a conversation with the bulls sometime, oh, you're from Saurashtra. That's where they're from. Tatra tatra hi tatra tyar Hari pratyud yatar hanaha Sayam bheje disham paschad Kavishto gam gatastada. On his journey through these provinces, he was welcomed, worshipped, and given various presentations. In the evening, in all places, the Lord suspended his journey to perform evening rites. This was regularly observed after sunset. And here Prabhupada points out that the Lord, as the leader, Shreshta, the chief person, sets the example. Name partasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana. Nanavaptam avaptavyam varte vachakarman. Krishna says there's no duty prescribed for me anywhere in the three worlds, but still I perform these prescribed duties, because if I didn't, everyone would follow me. Yadihyam navarteyam jatu karman yatandita. Mamavart manuvartante manusya partha sarvasha. So he has to set the example. But the Lord also does extraordinary things, and one should not imitate the activities reserved for the all-powerful Lord. And Bhagavatam, naitat samacharech jatu manasapi hyanishvadaha minashyati acharan modhyad yata rudroti jambisham Isharanam vachas satyam tatayabhar charitam kuchit tesham yat svabacho yuktam buddhimam stat samachare. One should simply follow the instructions of the Lord and his empowered servants. Their instructions are all good for us, and any intelligent person, buddhiman, will perform them as instructed. One should guard against trying to imitate their actions. One should not try to drink the ocean of poison in imitation of Lord Shiva. Anishra means those who are not powerful. They shouldn't imitate manasapi, even in their minds. They shouldn't even, don't even think of it. Don't even think of it. Out of the question. Isharana, vacha satyam. We should follow the words, the instructions of those powerful controllers, and not try to imitate their unique activities. And therefore Prabhupada says, in all actions, the experienced guide, the spiritual master, who is the manifested mercy of the Lord, should always be consulted, and the path of progress will be assured. That's how we know what to follow and what to hold on our heads as being the activities reserved for the all-powerful Lord. And that's the end of the chapter. Are there any questions? We have a few minutes left.
It seems like, I mean, earlier on in the talk, Shri Prabhupada mentioned that Krishna is not so clearly explained in the Parshas and the Vedas. But here the women of Hastinapur.
Yeah.
So then, I actually thought, well, why is that? Why isn't it that the Parshas are clearly showing Krishna's attributes?
Why aren't the Upanishads so clearly enunciated? Because the Upanishads are meant for the philosophers who are still trying to work their way through the forest of Gyan. They're still on the intellectual platform trying to distinguish between matter and spirit, between reality and unreality. Tamasi ma jyotirgama, don't stay in the darkness, come to the light. This is not the truth, this is not the truth, this is not the truth, this is not the truth. The truth must be beyond all of this. They're just working their way through all of that business. And after many, many lifetimes of cultivating that gyan, when they actually become gyanis in the true sense of having knowledge, gyanavan, mam prapadyate, then they surrender to Krishna. Vasudeva sarvam, Krishna is everything. So these women, although they appear to be just, you know, some city girls, because they're the girls of this city, they're postgraduate students in Vedic knowledge, because they've surrendered to Krishna, which the gyanis still have to wait to do until many lifetimes of mental speculation have gone by for them. They've already surpassed that. Jnana Karmajanavrita. They're finished with sense gratification and mental speculation. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. They're just completely absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Speaking of Krishna, thinking of Krishna, seeing Krishna. Actually, they're so qualified they get to see Krishna. So this is far beyond the reach of the Upanishads. Therefore, the Upanishads, Sridhar Swami mentions, are congratulating them. You're beyond what we can touch. We only can hint at this region, and you're there. Okay. Yes. Last.
Krishna putting in Indra, in heavenly palace, to rule over us. And other areas he is very envious. Anyone in Hindu yesterday, he is sending women and struggling there.
Yeah. This is the nature of big shots. He's Krishna's devotee. And these things are, you know, he gets pointed out that way. But otherwise, Indra also does lots of service. His failings are often pointed out, especially in Bhagavatam. We find out about Indra's overstepping his position. But he does so much service. He's in charge of the cloud and rain department. So he does a lot of service. But at the same time, he's got some attachment to sense gratification. Indra means that his post is known for being, you know, like in the government service, you know, if you're posted as the ambassador to Fiji, that's one thing. If you're posted as the ambassador to Paris, that's another thing. You know, Paris, there's every kind of enjoyment. So Indraloka is something like the Paris spot among these in Krishna's government. There's lots of sense gratification if you're posted to Indraloka. But the trouble with lots of sense gratification is you can get puffed up and then you get envious. No one should, you know, move in on my territory. So this happens. Even though he's a devotee, he's not on the highest standard of devotional service. Is that okay?
Huh?
Succumb, definitely succumb. Otherwise, he wouldn't be Indra. He'd be in the spiritual world. He's Indra means he's still a prisoner. What is that? Indra Gopa Mata Vendra Maho Shukarma Bandhan Rupa Palabha. He's still a conditioned soul. He's not free. He's just a better class of prisoner, that's all. You know, like the prisoners they send to these, their prisons, what do they call them? No, there's some name they call it. What is it? Yeah, there's a name that the inmates have for it. Club Fed. The federal prison for the, you know, for the big aristocrats. Club Fed. So Indraloka is something like Club Fed. You're in jail, but you've got a golf course, you've got movies, you've got all of these things. So that's Indraloka. Club Fed. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.